This is the Straight Talk on the concept of life architecture. I'm Wendy Keene, host of Straight Talk, and I'm joined today by our guest star, Gary Wright. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Wendy. How are you?
I'm good. Delighted you're here.
Oh, well, thanks for having me today.
Well, the mission of Straight Talk is to break down business architecture bit by bit with the goal of simplifying, scaling, and actually delivering value with discipline. And what we're trying to do is create a shared foundation of knowledge. But today we're going to take a little sidestep on a related topic and one that matters to our lives and with a very special guest. I met Gary Wright when I was teaching a business architecture training series, and this was one of those times when you actually have no idea who's sitting in your class and how your life is about to change. I, of course, related to Gary from a business architecture perspective, but as the week unfolded, I realized what an extraordinary human I had met. Gary is a survivor of the Unabomber, a domestic terrorist who was the focus of the longest running, most expensive criminal investigation in US history. And Gary was nearly killed when he picked up a pipe bomb in the parking lot of his business and has spent years recovering from his injuries. But it is through his experience that he has triumphed and emerged with a unique perspective on what it takes to recover from an act of terrorism, violence, or trauma. And he regularly shares his insights with business professionals and individuals like us. So, as a part of the ways he gives back, Gary focuses on the concept of life architecture. So let's learn more about that. Gary, what is life architecture?
Well, first of all, Wendy, thank you for the introduction. It was really, like you say, happenstance in a way to meet as we did. But it's a good thing we're on a podcast so people don't see me blush. So that's all good. So the concept of life architecture, in simple terms, it's a framework that allows a person to evaluate strengths and weaknesses, and it assists in creating a blueprint or a map on how best to move forward when life changes unexpectedly. You look at different personal goals or maybe an impact that your life will never be the same. And that was kind of the case for me. So in some ways, similar to business architecture, life architecture has core and extended domains. So I have named those life blocks. Each life block has a category, and there are different levels under each category. So if I give you an example in health being a core life block, I think all of us would acknowledge, you would have physical, mental, emotional, philosophical, spiritual, whatever else would pertain directly to a sense of health. And so when you start to evaluate each one of those areas, sometimes you will find that they can be really severely impacted. For instance, going through the Unabomber experience and not knowing who he was for 9 years, you can imagine not only was the physical side, which was, you know, damage, what have you, to the body, the mental, emotional, even philosophical side of it was impacted. And understanding how to move forward with that became really difficult because counselors at that time were not assigned to survivors of incidences like that. And so you were kind of on your own. And so as I started to look at these little pieces at that time, they weren't even coalesced into a framework, but looking at each one of those pieces, there was a realization that you had to somehow start to address and evaluate, self-evaluate really hard sometimes, what needed to change. So like business, sometimes it's really difficult to evaluate what's going to happen or what has happened that was unseen and try to apply what you know to make it change, to make it successful, move forward in a positive way. Or in some cases, you know, success is cutting it off and stopping altogether. But that in a nutshell is somewhat what life architecture is about.
And why do you think the concept of life architecture is so important?
It's a really loaded question at this point, Wendy, because the world's a really busy place and people struggle in their own right just to keep up with the demands of business. Now you tie into that family life, health and nutrition, relationships. How do you balance that effort? And how do you know how to load yourself properly? Because today it seems we're overloaded in one area or another very heavily. So I think that people have some adjustments going on as technology and other things change our lives. I mean, let's face it, 20 years ago, nobody thought that your phone would be an extended desktop 24/7, right? There is a need for us to slow down a little bit and take a good inventory of what our lives look like. Look at the things that work. I mean, if inside your core isn't solid, so if you have the values, some of what I stated before, but your health, your knowledge, your value system, your finances, if those sorts of things at a core level are not taken care of, you can't possibly reach out to these other extended areas like relationships, family, you look at different community type things. You have to start with the core component of it. And I think just like business, if your core isn't solid, your extended areas are not going to be solid either. So for me, life architecture became this little set of building blocks, almost like Legos. I'm a Lego fan. So snapping things together and having a visual was very helpful to me in moving from a really bad place to what I hope is a really good place. And so life architecture is something I think people are very good at business sometimes, very good at analyzing things, but they don't do a very good job of applying that same sort of analysis to their own personal lives. And I think that we need to do that in order to provide clarity on where we want to go, to reduce stress and increase our overall mental health and our happiness. Because outside of that, our society in general could use a bit of it if you look at it from an old neighborhood concept, that the better the people interaction, the better the neighborhood.
You're right. There is this requires a new sort of rigor and perspective applied to our personal lives. Just curious what you find in working with people. Does it come naturally, or do you really have to sort of coach them through the process to think that way?
That's a really good question, because I think it's probably similar to some things I see in business, where if you have a person who is very, I guess, inwardly focused to say, I'm going to make my life as calm as it can be, I want to learn new tools, they're very proactive in it, that's a pretty simple conversation. You can have a really difficult conversation. For instance, one thing about going through the Unabomber event that was somewhat hard to accept in the beginning, but it was a really great learning tool looking backwards, is realizing or telling someone your life is never going to be the same. It can be different. It can be better. Lots of things, can be different, but it will never be the same. It's hard for some people to understand. And even when you transform and somebody says, I'm going to start a health program, well, that takes commitment. And sometimes you have to look at your old self and then look to the future and say, but I want something better. So it that balance right there and having the conversation with someone is quite broad. I mean, it's very different from person to person. You will have small clusters of people who are similar thinking individuals, which will be easier, but you have others who struggle. And I don't view that as anything kind of rare. I think we're all built differently, chemically, emotionally, whatever. So hopefully, at least if one thing resonates with a person when I speak with them or try to help, that they will take that with them and say, oh, I can build on that one block and then, hopefully expand from there.
Absolutely. So maybe you could share a bit more about your own personal story and what led you to create this idea of life architecture.
Sure. Well, in 1987, I was a pretty young guy at that time, and I had started a company that my entire family worked for me as well as other individuals, but it was in the computer industry, high-tech industry, and the Unabomber was focused on anti-technology thoughts, and so I was targeted for that reason. So I picked up a bomb in the parking lot of my business, and there was about 200 pieces of shrapnel that went through my body, lots of injuries and things like that that were physical. But it became pretty apparent that the physical side was going to heal to the capacity of whatever, you know, biology, DNA that we have, and as well as the physical therapy you do. But the other side of it, the mental and that side of the healing was pretty tough. So I went through about a 6-year period, in and out of surgery, different things like that. So multiple surgeries, lots of stuff. But it was about a 6-year period when I finally came to the conclusion, I might not know who this person was because I never found out who it was for 9 years. So I struggled with, who is this guy? Was it in business? Was it a personal relationship? What have you? And that drain on a daily basis, let alone thinking maybe they'd come back, was really hard. And that impact extends, you know, you have the person themselves that's injured, but then you have your parents, your family, your friends, your work. All those things are affected because of, let's say, security at work. You have to notify your job that these kinds of things have been in your life and now everybody knows. So there are a number of things that had an impact. And being somewhat in that spotlight for a long time, I started to realize, look, I've got to find a way to balance some of this and accept that he may never be found. What am I going to do with this ghost person, if you will? And how do I move on? And so that component of it is kind of what the precursor to some of these things in life architecture have been built around, in that I would find a block. And believe me, there's nothing linear in this healing process. They'll talk about grief or what have you. It's not linear. It's not like there's a perfect set of stairs. Sometimes you go up 3 stairs and realize there's 4 basements below you and fall down to the bottom. And that's a long stairway to come up again. So the process of that, the time of it, the length of time associated with it, I think gave me the ability to take a hard look at myself and also the interactions I had with people. And so from the Unabomber perspective, the story being a big one, being in the spotlight a lot, and believe me, there's nothing special about this story. It just happened to have a lot of press around it. There's many, many things that are worse than what I went through, and I'm really quite aware of that. But I think that it does give you pause when you have an event like that that slows you down a bit.
I have to say, I'm absolutely humbled and astounded at your journey, and I think what it represents for the human spirit. I know one of the things that we do share is sort of this love of repetitive motion and endurance exercise. I wonder if you could just share a bit on maybe how that either fits in life architecture or how it helped in your healing process.
Yeah, and I think I was fascinated when I found out your love for the repetitive motion endurance type stuff as well. One of the key things I found through the healing process was this effect on the mind and the body. I mean, the body was actually a byproduct of it, but the effect when you have especially endurance type training where it's repetitive, so your brain goes to a different place, it's aerobic in that you're getting some great exercise. But taking your mind to a different place through the repetitive motion, I did a lot of experiments on myself, if you will, through cycling and different, you know, walking long distances, whatever, but got into long distance cycling. And your mind goes to a different place and you start to evaluate problems differently. And one of the correlations I see is that you can be hurting inside, emotionally, whatever the case might be. But as you go through that repetitive motion cycle, there comes a point where your mind and your body come in sync. And I believe there is a point that crosses over where your mind starts to realize that just like after you've gone through a long run and you have the healing process the next day or any type of an event like that where you've stressed your muscles, your mind starts to get in sync and realize it too can heal. And it's kind of subliminal. Some of it is, I'm sure, just introspection while you're out there, because you know when you're on that long run, Wendy, how that is. Your mind goes to different places and you don't have to think that hard just answers come naturally. So the repetitive motion side of it is fascinating to me. I've done quite a bit of research and talked to a number of really cool institutions and research folks around the country about it. And there is a lot of power in that. So it's something that, you know, I know you and I will explore more, and I'm excited to do that.
Excellent. So we want to move into action. How do we, as individuals, put this idea of life architecture that you've described here into action?
Well, I think the first step is people know when things are out of sync. At least I believe they do. I think you could pretty much say that about anybody. But I think the first thing you have to do is really sit down. And I'm a pretty firm believer in saying, hey, I'm going to get away from everything, even if I'm sitting in the car and it's just super quiet, right? But you have to evaluate what is and isn't working in life just to get a feel for, you know, why is it and what isn't going right. And you have to be really, really honest with that process. I tend to jot things down just because I forget them. I tend to talk really fast at times, and if I don't get it down, sometimes I forget it. But I think that if you will take a look and write that down, then at least you have a baseline for, hey, maybe something's out of whack. Then I think you can take a look at these core and extended domains, not unlike what you would do with business architecture, where you're going to take a hard look and map something and look at, you know, whatever level one, level two, level three capabilities of yourself, right? And you can highlight those even in color and say, well, green, I'm great here. Yellow, maybe a warning. Red, yeah, that's really bad. And you will start to see that there are some things that become not only interrelated, but I think you can shortcut how to change or make change in your life sometimes, because when you see the interrelated components, then you know a little bit better about either, do I need to talk to someone? Should I read something? Should I just start to make a change on a daily basis and say, be really patient with myself on how I do it? So I'm going to screw up one time out of 10, two times out of 10, three times out of 10, whatever it is, and try and work your changes any way you need to. But I think having a map, I am a visual person, and I know I can give a person a business case and let them read it. Or I can put it into two slides that are great pictures, talk through it, and they get it. So I think if you have the visual of what you see, you then can have better action around that. But I do know this, that there are thousands and thousands of resources at our fingertips that have not been available before. I mean, let's face it, Google and the internet are the biggest library you could ever hope for. And there's wonderful resources out there that before, how do you even find them? And so I think that people can begin to apply their expertise in business, and it isn't even business. It's literally a job. I mean, a mom is an important job, and she has skill sets that we don't have or we could use in business, right? Running a house is a big deal. So it's not like it has to be a business, but you take your business sense and apply it to your personal life, and really cool things can start to happen.
Yes. Do you have any final words you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, a little bit. I asked myself this question when I was about 30 years old. And I was sitting there one day, busy like we are. And I said, do you deserve 10% of your day? And at that time, I was a single dad raising two kids about 7 years apart in age. And I thought, geez, 10% of my day, 2.4 hours? I don't need 2.4 hours. But 5% of my day? Yeah, I deserve that. And so it's been a long time ago, but I dedicated and said, I'm taking that 1.2 hours a day. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less, but on an average, and I do what I need to, physically, mentally, whatever it is. And unless you plan that in and make it a priority, it never will be. But I can tell you, I still am extremely productive. I still work lots of hours. But that 1.2 hours a day keeps me grounded in what I need to do. And I think if you apply at least a little piece of that to looking at your personal life in the same way that you worry about your business and your emails and everything else that come through on a daily basis with this extended desktop, think about what that would look like if you applied that same sort of focus to your personal life. I mean, you would have better relationships, more conversations. I think you feel more grounded. And so I think that that is one of the components. And one thing I will say is that meeting you has led you and I on this journey, which has been really cool, by the way. I mean, those long runs, that's something I couldn't do. I'm a wuss when it comes to that. Now, cycling, I can do it. But the running is really, really hard. And so I admire that in you. But I'm really excited that we're going to launch this podcast series where we can explore some of these things we're talking about today. You know, how you have to have life-work balance, how it can apply to business principles, how business principles can be applied to your personal life, and some of those areas. So I'm really excited that, you know, you and I have come together and that we're so different, but at the same time have this Venn diagram of common thoughts that I think this podcast series that we're talking about launching, and, you know, more information will come on it shortly, but I think it would just be the coolest thing ever to be able to take real hardcore principles from business or, you know, whatever area we want to explore and apply these other areas that have been so important in our lives.
I couldn't agree more. And just being able to share, I think, unique and interesting angles that can help people, whether it's just feeling better and having more energy in a day or healing or just being able to show up with more confidence in work and in life. I'm so looking forward to that. And as you said, we will make some information available in the corresponding post here with your podcast.
Yeah, that sounds great, Wendy. Really looking forward to it.
Well, Gary, thank you so much for joining us. I have to say it has truly been an honor to speak with you. And thank you for all that you do on a daily basis to give back and help others through preparedness and life architecture and just generally helping people to become your best self. So appreciate how you've taken your experiences and have not only shown the power of the human spirit, but you use it to help others.
Well, thanks so much, Wendy. I'm just filled honored to be able to share what I can and see if an individual, you know, gets something out of it. So that's my measurement. If a single person can get where they need to be in a shorter amount of time by learning, you know, anything I have to say, then that makes my life full and happy as well.
Indeed. Thank you for that. And thank you all for joining us. We'll talk to you next time on Straight Talk.